Welcome to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Ryan Bizarro. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. If you want to find us, you can find us on Instagram at Justin Bizarro, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. And again, you can find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. So I'm going to jump right into it. This is a show like my other shows. It's like Justin the Food Entrepreneurs, but just with the entrepreneurs. So that is the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. We also talk about things, life, different entrepreneurs, different people, different professions. So it's kind of fun. So today I'm very excited about this. I've been a fan of BMX bikes since I was like ever saw the Rad movie. So probably like 6 or 7 years old. I don't know what year that movie came out, but whenever year it came out, I was definitely a fan since then. Cost my parents a lot of Christmas presents, I'm sure, and nagging. And I saved up a lot of money growing up to buy my stuff for my BMX bike. So with that being said, I have Sean Nichols from Rad BMX Built out of Phoenix, Arizona. How are you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing great, Justin. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, Sean, tell me your background a little bit. Tell me how you grew up, where you grew up, and or obviously how you fell in love with BMX bikes.
Sure, yeah. So I'm 51 years old. I was born in 1971 in Upland, California. And I got into bikes at a very early age, about 5 or 6, I started racing BMX. And it went into my teenage years, and I would ride at the Upland skate park, and I would see people back then like Eddie Fiola, Martin Aparillo, Mike Dominguez, all these guys riding these skate parks. So they were clearly impactful on what I was doing, and I just really got into it. And, you know, being in high school in the 80s, BMX and skating was such a big thing. And so I did both of those. But when I turned 18, I was the last kid in the house. My parents were ready for me to get out. So I kind of panicked, didn't know what to do to get out of the house. So I joined the military at 18. And I did that for about 27 and a half years. I retired. And then I was in law enforcement for a while. I stopped doing that and decided to open my own business. And that's where I'm at now. And it just kind of went from hobby of building bikes in the garage, and I started posting them on my private personal Instagram page. And if you've been following me that far back, it had a different name back then. It was actually Sean something. I don't even remember at this point, but it just kind of went crazy because nobody else was really doing it. And all these guys, middle-aged guys my age, started jumping on my page, liking the content. So I ended up deleting off all of the personal stuff on my page and just started proceeding with playing with the name and uploading photos of bikes.
What was the, do you remember the first bike you sort of started? Did you restore a bike or did you just build them? I mean, sort of explain that to me because I know you do work with some older bikes as well.
Yeah, I do quite a lot of all across the spectrum BMX. So if I want to go all the way back, I started off on a Schwinn Stingray because BMX, when I was starting off, wasn't really a thing yet. People were modifying Schwinn Stingrays and stuff like that until some of the companies came out with BMX bikes. And then I had multiple bikes throughout those years, like a Redline and a PK Ripper and all those kind of bikes. Wasn't really into the freestyle bike thing. I liked them, but I just couldn't afford them either. And no matter how many cars I washed, lawns I mowed, or paper routes I did, they were just a little beyond my reach. And so I just basically found used race bikes and used those a lot. But so the company, I do not build or restore bikes for other people. It's basically a social media content company. And I sometimes restore some bikes, but I like to put my personal touch on things. I'm not a purist. I don't like to make bikes look identical with the identical parts because that's not what we did as kids. We'd go buy a bike and immediately start buying anodized parts, swapping parts with friends. And in the 80s, it was all about individualism and your style and your look. So I never rode a stock looking bike. So I try not to build bikes that look like that. But I have a plethora of bikes from the early 80s all the way up to brand new bikes. Even if I get a brand new bike, I do a retro spin on it to make it look more of a 80s bike, even though it's brand new.
How did you find the part? How did you like start doing this? Like if you're one of the only ones doing it, how did you start assembling the pieces? Because I do think you were one of the first that really started doing this, and I don't know of many shops. I couldn't find like a Mongoose Decade Pro anywhere until I saw it on your thing again, because that was the, like, my bike I'd stolen while I was in college. But that's like, you know, that's like the thing that you want. So tell me a little bit about, how'd you assemble the first bike, like, and what was it actually?
That's a great question, because it's definitely different now than it was then. So I was at my aunt's house, and in her backyard, she's got a pretty good chunk of property, was a Haro Group 1 chrome frame sitting in the ground about halfway buried. And I pulled it out of the ground and said to my aunt, what is this? You know, whose is it? She goes, oh, it was my son's. He took it all apart, threw it in the backyard. It's been sitting out there forever. I said, can I have it? She said, sure. So I brought it home, and then I just started learning how to clean chrome and fix it up. And then I, just like you said, where do I get parts? You know, that was the hardest thing. And so I relied heavily at that time on eBay. So I would search eBay every now and then, maybe Facebook Marketplace, but that's never really yielded a whole bunch for me. I was finding most of my parts on eBay in the beginning. So that's really where I built that bike, and probably the two or three bikes after that.
What's been your favorite bike to build so far?
Oh, wow. I like to break bikes in about three different categories: old school race, old school freestyle, and then new school retro. So I would say my favorite old school bike to build is either my PK Ripper or my Hutch Pro Racer. I have those currently in my collection. I really like those. And freestyle bikes, I have a 1987 GT Performer that's chrome that Eddie Fiola signed. So that's probably my favorite freestyle. And then if we wanted to go new school retro, I got a couple that I absolutely love, but I have a 26-inch Hutch, and it was built in 2017, but it's serial number one, and it has all Hutch parts on it, so that's probably my favorite newer bike.
It's very cool. Very cool. So what year would you say you officially started actually being a business?
So it was supposed to be a hobby. I was getting ready to retire. I started doing this about 2 years before I retired. And it's just kind of a fun thing in my garage. And then when I retired, I did a lot of traveling, but I was still finding myself searching online for bikes, parts, wherever I was. And sometimes if I was like, let's say, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, I would look on local marketplaces and sometimes find bikes or parts and grab them. So it just became a little bit of an obsession. But when the Instagram started to take off a bit, I started making pretty decent money building and selling bikes. And for tax purposes and, you know, to protect myself, I decided I better make this an LLC. So when I was in Texas, I went ahead and got my LLC, and I believe that was back in 2018. I think is when I made it official. But I was doing it a couple years before that.
It's really cool. I mean, it's so creative. You've built a brand. I mean, it's identifiable. I mean, the logo, everything like that. So when you decided to actually become a business, how'd you come up with the name? How'd you design the logo? Like, because it's very creative. It's suiting for what you're trying to do. It's almost old with new.
Yeah, that's another excellent question. I spent a lot of time and talked to a lot of people, did a lot of Google searching and trying to figure out. Branding is one of the most important parts of a small business. And like anything, if you look at the Nike swoosh symbol, you know that it's Nike by looking at the emblem. So I wanted to have a company that was easily identifiable, like you said. And I appreciate you saying that. But I had an idea in my mind, and I kind of want, I use the Maui and Sons logo as inspiration because it's just very iconic 80s and 80s colors. So I hired a graphic designer. And we worked together on multiple different designs. The font that he used is a one-off. We created that. So I didn't steal an already made font. We created our own. And then just started adding the grid, like the movie Tron. You know, I added the grid in the letters. Then the pink triangle probably came from like the Maui and Sons logo idea. And I just started playing around with all these different shapes, designs. And of course, if you're into BMX like this, you said the movie Rad was a big inspiration to you. You have to use that word. And just like the character Radical Rick, I mean, Rad is used so much in this sport that I wanted to incorporate that somehow. And then I wanted people to know what my business was. So Rad and BMX just went perfect. Now the word builds, I don't know that I regret it, but I think it misleads people a little bit. I get dozens of DMs every single day. Will I build a bike for somebody? Although I build bikes, I don't really build them for people, and I'm not a bike shop, and it confuses a lot of people, but I'm trying to build Rad bikes for content and to grow my company, not just flip and turn bikes. I don't want to do that. It's not really the lane I wanted to go down. So I think the word builds is a little confusing for people. Maybe it feels like my builds. But that's how I kind of came up with the name and the logo. And it's evolved a little bit since then. There's a 2.0 version with the paint splatter. And I'm just trying to, that was for a new launch of merch. You know, I do have a merch line as well. That's on my website. So I'm just trying to keep new stuff up and going all the time. So just as new ideas pop in my head, I kind of go with that direction. And it's good to have a bigger audience because I can test the waters with it, you know?
I agree with you. And I think that just your interest alone is like driving you. I mean, you're staying true to who you are. You're not just going after the dollar. You're actually created a good loyalty following. I mean, we were just talking about 101,000 followers on Instagram, and that's just how many people are BMX fans out there that are relating to what you are, you know, or maybe not. Maybe they are now BMX fans because of what you're doing. Yeah, I think that's incredible, right? Like, who would have thought like a sport that no one really thought about much kind of disappeared in the 80s and 90s and now is having such a comeback? What a great timing. You know, I think that's part of it, and the racing and seeing the kids take interest in again. You go to like Philadelphia and they're all over the Philadelphia Zoo and things yeah. like that. And so like, it's the way I grew up. I grew up riding the bicycles, doing the tricks and freestyling and doing whatever I could on my farm, jumping off of things, you know, the higher, the better. And so it's just such a part of our history, particularly American history, that I think, what an interesting perspective and what a great thing to do. Like, I know there's a lot of interest and attachment to our old bikes that we had when we were growing up, but you're right, they were sort of a Frankenstein of parts that we put together anyway, you know, pegs right. and all sorts of different stuff that we could have on there. For us, that made them more like us, the color, the different things from different parts, from different companies. So I really like what you're doing. Where do you think that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. I love this.
I think what a lot of companies were doing back then, since they were attempting to do mass production bikes, let's pick like Mongoose or Redline, and because they knew they were going to be making a couple thousand units, they wouldn't put on necessarily the greatest of components. So they would build a great bike, and they maybe cheapen it down with certain components because maybe they can get them in mass bulk order, cheaper or whatever, to trying to save that dollar. And so we'd get the bikes and want the Maxi Cross 3-piece anodized crank. So we'd have to come out of pocket for stuff like that. So keeping that in mind when I build bikes, it's all about balance of color and details when I build bikes. If it doesn't look right with a certain part or component, even though that's what came with it, I got to keep in mind that even though it probably came with that part, that might not be the best fit for that look or that bike. And we probably would have changed it if we had the money to do it back then when we bought it. So now that I have the money to build bikes however I want, I'm going to build them like a kid walking into a bike shop in 1987 with dad's credit card with no limit. And I'm going to buy every part and component I want to make the bike the way I want it. But being a content creator, I have to make sure that other people will also like that. And I've learned what people like and what they don't over the years. And really it's that overall appearance. You know, I've seen a lot of bikes out there on the internet that people build and they don't hit right. You know, they're very creative, and I'm not ever going to bash someone that wants to build bikes, but they also just don't, you know, spark the interaction that something that would drive a reply because it sparked a memory. And the whole logo behind my company is building memories, because I want to build a bike that spawns some sort of memory that you had when you were a kid. And that's how you get interaction from your followers. And I love hearing those stories. That's what drives me every single day, is that I got some guy to remember a really good time in his life and maybe not have to deal with that moment of having a hardship or worried about bills, but he actually went back to when he was 16 and had zero pressure or responsibilities when he was riding his bike. I love being able to do that for people.
Do you ride bikes still today?
Almost every day. A lot of people see my bikes and don't think I ride them, but every single bike in my collection has been ridden by me, every single one of them.
I love this because I think you got to enjoy what you're doing, right? That's this incredible. I would ride all of them at least once before I even sold them. I would have to try out my work.
Absolutely. Yeah, every bike I would, if I do end up wanting to sell a bike, I have to make sure I'm not going to send them something that hasn't been ridden and tested and works. So I will absolutely ride and QC the bike before I send it off to somebody as well.
What would you say your greatest motivation is? Like, what's your inspiration? What keeps you going down the path in doing this project or business, I should say, making every bike different?
You know, for me, I think I'm a very creative person, always have been, but in the career that I had, you didn't really have that opportunity to be creative. Even when I was in high school, I would do a lot of cartooning and drawing and just always a creative, busy mind. So when I retired, I didn't want to be bored and I didn't want to be uncreative. So I wanted to find something that I was passionate about. And this bike thing just kind of randomly happened and took off. And I found myself slipping out of the reality of all the things that are hard in life and finding myself in the shop, listening to 80s music, wrenching on a bike, creating it the way I would want to create it. And it was very, like, almost therapeutic, you know? So that's what keeps me going. Actually, I work probably 18 hours a day and I'm up at 4 a.m. I'm looking online, I'm checking social media, I'm looking for bikes, looking for parts, I'm shopping, I'm in the shop building, and then I'm doing it all day long. And I wouldn't do that if I didn't like it. So it's absolutely a passion and it's enjoyable. And I think that's why I do it every single day. I don't have a day off. You know, I work 7 days a week, 18 hours a day thinking about BMX bikes.
This is awesome. So is there anything in particular that, you know, you're like, this is, you know, I've got to meet so-and-so. I got to meet so-and-so. Now that were your like childhood dreams, now are your adulthood, you know, realities. Tell me a little bit about that.
You know, I'm very fortunate. I've met just about every single childhood BMX star you can meet. And as I got into this, I started remembering all these people. And over the last couple of years specifically, I've checked every single box of every pro rider you can think of that I wanted to meet from back then, from Greg Hill, Mike Buff, Perry Kramer, Eddie Fiola. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I've met every single one of these people and they're all just like you and me. There's no difference whatsoever. And super humble dudes that just, you know, still love the sport and still have a passion for it. And they want to hear your story as much as you want to hear theirs. And I've been really fortunate to where I've got to sit down with some of these people and do interviews with them and put it on my YouTube channel, take photos with them and put them on my Instagram. So for me, that's documenting, being able to meet these people and interact with them. And then I document it so I can look back at it at some point and go, man, I remember the day I talked to Perry Kramer about my high school PK Ripper, like goals, you know, or talk to Eddie Fiola about the movie Rad and how he not only rode in it, but was a stunt writer in it as well. And they dubbed in for the actor, Bill Allen. So, I mean, there's just so much. I've been really fortunate about that. So, yeah, I don't know that anyone's left on the list, but I'm absolutely open-minded of finding some of these people behind the scenes in the sport, you know, the people that made the bikes. You know, I met Gary Turner, who made GT, obviously. And that got me thinking, like, man, I'd like to meet some of these other iconic people. Sadly, a few have passed away at this point, but there's still a few out there that, like, how did you get, let's say, I'm just going to throw a random name, like Redline started or CW or Hutch, you know? Those are the kind of people I'd love to talk to.
Yeah, I love it as well. I think that they're the brains behind, like, creating the bikes that helped facilitate the sports as we know it.
Absolutely.
And Rad was a huge influence to me. That's one of the reasons I did this. Like, as I was telling Sean beforehand, and I think the audience knows, or anyone who looks at me on Instagram, I even do posts about rad and all the learning entrepreneurial ingenuity. You know, when things are hard, you got to do it yourself. You know, all that movie, it's like about relationships and building them and how important it is to stick to your goals and no one else will believe in them except for you. There's like all these lessons learned, and it's no different than any other growing sport and kids who look up to it. But that movie provided me with so much foundation, like so much purpose. Weirdly, I would play soccer and then I would go into being an entrepreneur, but all of it would be around just that whole attitude. I only get one shot at this. I'm not going to blow it. Let's make the most out of life. All of those things came out of that movie for me, including the love of BMX bikes, because I hadn't seen them. Or, you know, I'd ridden bikes, done tricks and stuff like that, but I never put two and two together until I saw that movie. And I was pretty young, 6 or 7 years old when that movie came out. I was born in end of 79, like beginning of 80, basically, December 20th of 79. So, you know, that movie had such impact on me. And, you know, the tricks and the stunts and trying to imitate what was done there and, you know, just all of it. The trying to do flips and all of that stuff. God only knows how many bones I hurt. And friends damaged. Parents were like, probably not go over to Justin's house because he was getting everyone to like flip their bicycles upside down. And, but I mean, was it the same for you? I mean, movies like that, I mean, Rad in particular, you named your business after it. Talk to me about that a little bit. Talk to me about the impact of Rad on you, and even now, what does the movie have impact on you, and what does that look like?
So the movie came out in 1986. I think I was a freshman in high school, and the thing about that movie is I think we all are able to connect to it in some way, whether you are just riding bikes and doing a paper route, or you're a small town racer, or whatever. It's a love story, it's an action, there's even some comical parts of it. On some level, you're going to connect to that movie if you like bikes. And I think that's what got everybody on board with loving that movie so much. And for me, it's, you know, it's the small town hero story, right? Like this kid in this podunk town and this big corporation moves in and he fights his way all to the top and is able to win at the end. If you haven't seen the movie, I just spoiled it for you. If you haven't, shame on you. But it's just such a happy movie to watch that when you watch it, the first thing you want to do is go run out in the garage and get your bike and then take off with your friends. And I just love how that inspired me like that. As soon as we all saw it, all my friends at the time, we were into riding BMX bikes. All of a sudden, we're out there trying 360s. And then, I mean, we weren't trying the backflips, but we were absolutely doing the 360s. We were looking for like huge drop downs. Like the, remember the big wall, the starting gate, you drop down that 25-foot drop.
Yeah, and hell track.
So there's a big flood control in the town I grew up in Fullerton, California. And we would drop down that pretending that's hell track, you know, and just trying to relive the movie on our own scale, I think was just fun. It was something else to do. So yeah, it had a huge impact on me then. And the impact it has on me now is a little different because now that I've gotten to know like Hollywood Mike Miranda and Eddie Fuel and these guys, it's just really crazy to hear their stories of how the movie was made, the behind the scenes and how they ended up in the movie and all of that stuff. So I like now try to dissect that movie down to its just foundation, really. You've only seen the production finished version of it, but go meet the actors and actresses, go meet the guys that were writing in it and find out the history of all that. Is just, I feel like I know so much about that movie now that I never knew before. And the more I find out about it, I go back and I watch it again because I've learned something more. I look for it in the movie and then there it is. And I go, how did I miss that? You know, it's a lot of fun.
I do. I noticed that too. Now that I'm older and I watch it quite a bit, I notice that there's lots of things I didn't notice before. Like it seemed so much bigger in production than it is now that I watch it now. But it's just the movie just seemed larger than life for sure. And it still does in a lot of ways. I mean, just, you know, even knowing about it, I saw you recently posted someone gave you like a Hell Track ticket from like the 1980s on your Instagram. Tell me about that a little bit, because we are talking about the very Hell Track that was used in the movie.
Definitely. So that was quite a surprise. I have a friend, Corey, that I met is right when I came in the military. So we've been friends for 35 years now. And I built a green and white GT Performer for his custom show truck. That's a white and green lowered Chevy S10 convertible. So he puts that bike in the back of his truck, takes it to shows. And he came over when, and I presented him with the bike, and he was just kind of in awe at the shop. And he randomly came across those tickets and just sent them to me. And they're framed in a frame, and now they're hanging up in the shop. And just getting little gifts like that, you know, somebody showing their appreciation for something that I did, really is humbling. You know, it's just such a good friend. And I mean, I'm still surrounded by a small group of really good friends that I've known for over 30 years. And, you know, when you see something like that and you think of your friend and you buy him something like that as a surprise, that's such a cool thing. So very appreciative, very lucky to have friends like that to send me things like that, because I didn't know that existed. You know, I didn't know there were tickets like that floating around out there. So that's wild.
As an entrepreneur, like, how did you know, or when did you know this business was actually going to be successful for you? Like, how did you know that you were actually onto something, that this is going to be more than a hobby?
Yeah, again, great question. I wanted it to stay a hobby just to keep me busy post-retirement. And then when I found out, I'd sold a few bikes and they were selling so well that people were asking me to build bikes. But that was kind of my hard line in the sand. I just didn't want to build bikes, because you, me, and Johnny down the street all have a very specific image in mind of a bike that they would want. And building bikes for someone's interpretation of what they want is very hard to meet that standard. So I build them the way I want them, and then I sell them. If you want to change them after that, that's up to you. But I got to the point where they were selling quite well, and then social media started taking off. And I thought, wow, I'm going to take that momentum and see what I can do with it. And I was in Park City, Utah, and this is before I had a YouTube channel. And I met with a YouTuber that's got a pretty large channel. And I asked him how he got started. And he said, it's about demand, right? So if there's a demand for something and you have the opportunity to, you know, fulfill that, then you should do that. And what he meant by that was, he's got a Porsche and he wanted to do an oil change on it, and he couldn't find a video on YouTube anywhere. So he filmed himself doing an oil change and put it on YouTube, and it went crazy because there was no other videos like that. So he built a whole channel based around stuff. And then he said, you know what, Sean, you already have a following on Instagram. Leverage that and just carry it over to video. And I did. And so I created a YouTube channel. And again, that started, I mean, it's not doing as good as Instagram, but I have a lot of fun doing it. So now my main focus is YouTube. And it's a passion thing. And it's going to be great to look back one day when I'm not doing it and able to watch those videos and see those races and those big stars from the 80s and whatever I'm able to capture and edit and upload, kind of lives on forever, like a yearbook of that time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think what you're doing is a great job. So how do you, I mean, have you always been into social media? Was it something you did before bikes, or was it just something that you picked up on because of your interest? Did you use it to find other people with bikes? Like, talk to me about this. Or it's just like, I'm going to start posting this, because in an era where everyone's posting food and reels and stuff like that, you're sort of doing something that's different, that's unique.
Yeah, I'm so double-edged sword here. I never really liked social media, honestly. But I do like taking pictures, and I do like to share those pictures. So when I started posting the bikes, and the reaction that it was getting was kind of like, wow, it's kind of rewarding to see that somebody appreciates something you did so much. So I just started feeding the baby, is what we call it on Instagram. You feed that algorithm fresh content and it will grow. So that's kind of just what I started doing. You know, I would stay consistent and keep uploading stuff, because I build so much so fast that I can't even keep up with it on social media. There's so much more going on that I don't even get to capture on film. And the comments that I get, and then I go to shows and meet the people that make those comments, is crazy to me. Like, I'm just some random average middle-aged guy, even beyond middle age at this point. So it's just to go walk down this, you know, a parking lot at a bike show and someone wear my shirt or hat and come up to me and go, oh my God, I watch your YouTube channel, is the craziest feeling. I'm just Sean, I build bikes. So it's really crazy for people to be so supportive like that. And for me, that's fun. So of course I'm going to try to propel the business by leveraging social media.
I really enjoy this. Where are you hoping this goes? Like, where are you hoping this future brings you? You talked about the YouTube channel. You talked about maybe even doing a podcast. You've talked about, you know, expanding your horizon. You're right now in Phoenix, but you're maybe going back to California. Like, talk to me about where you are, where life has you, and sort of what that means for your business and where you want it to go.
You know, I'm supposed to be retired enjoying life, and I am enjoying what I'm doing, but I see two different things happening here. What we're doing with these bikes, my target audience, according to my analytics, is 45 to 55 years old is the majority of the people that are subscribed and following my content. And that tells me that there are dudes my age out there that might have a man cave or a garage or a bar in their basement. They want to hang up a bike that, you know, gives them those nostalgic memories. I feel like that at some point won't be around anymore, because we're going to turn 60, 65, maybe 70, and we're just not going to want to spend money on a bike or just find other things to do in your later years. So I feel like there is an end to this at some point. It's a fad, and like anything, it's a fad, then dies off, then comes back. But right now it's on a bubble. It's at a high right now and it's doing very well. And I don't want to jump off the ship quite yet, you know, until it's reached that horizon. But right now what I want to do is build my YouTube. The Instagram went far beyond my expectations. And my goal on Instagram was 50,000. It was my all-time life achievement goal. And I've over doubled that. So even though I still post Instagram, I don't really have any further Instagram goals. I have YouTube goals, of course. And that, so my primary focus now is focusing on YouTube and growing that would be my immediate 3-year goal, probably.
Awesome. Where can they find you online? Where can they find you on YouTube?
Great. So you can go to my website, which is radbmxbuilds.com. And there are links to all my social medias there. And if you ever wanted to buy one of my bikes, that's where you'll find them. I don't sell them on Instagram. I don't sell them on eBay. I only do the stuff through the website. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's rad_BMX_builds. And then on YouTube is just radbmxbuilds.
Tell me about your personal collection, the bikes that you build that no one else can have. What are those bikes? And maybe you mentioned them earlier, but what are the bikes that you've built that are just like, or quote unquote restored, even though we know, we understand what that means to you. Like, what are the ones that are in your private collection that will never be sold? I mean, cause that's also, it may be a business that goes away, but you've acquired this one amazing skill, but two, probably an amazing collection.
Yeah, I call it my grail collection, because over the several years that I've been doing this, 7-8 years now, I've been doing this, and I've let a few bikes go that I kind of kicked myself in the rear for doing that, but they were good business decisions at the time, and it propelled me quite a lot when I did, so I can't get mad about letting things go, but now I'm at a point where I don't need to let anything go if I don't want to, so I started really narrowing my searches down to bikes that mean something to me. Now, are they the most expensive sought after bikes? Not all of them, but they mean something to me. And that's what I'm building my collection towards now, is bikes that I would have wanted. And there's a few out there that I'm still looking for, but I've started to acquire a collection of about 25 to 30 BMX bikes. And out of those, 15 to 20 are bikes that I'm not willing to let go of. And because they all have some sort of, you know, personal attachment to, if you will. Will I ever get rid of them? I don't know what the future will hold. I have other aspirations in the future, spinning this business off into another one at some point that I can still utilize those bikes. So there's a few bikes in there in the collection I don't want to get rid of, but the bikes are used primarily for content. And once I use them for content and I don't foresee them doing any more content, that's when I throw them on the website and put them up for sale. Sell those, move them out of the collection, and then buy something and move something new in. And then I can film that build up and then that reveal and then whatever I choose to use for content. So the bikes have a life cycle, you know. I buy them, build them, film them, document it, enjoy them. Then when they start sitting for a while and I realize, hey, I haven't really looked at that, messed with that, maybe I'll sell it if it's one of those that I'm able to get rid of.
Which ones aren't you not willing to get rid of?
I have a 1983 PK Ripper, and I had one of those and raced it in high school. And this is the version that I wish that one was, so I'm never going to get rid of that one.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, that was I got the biggest connection to. And that's a recent, I've had it for years, but I just recently completed it about 6 months ago. So it's a fairly new completion. And then I have a 1987 GT Performer that Eddie Fiola has signed and ridden. And I just really like that bike. Even though it's just a performer, it's not a pro freestyle tour or pro performer. The performer was the one that most kids could afford and get. And it being in chrome is kind of rare. But it's a full restoration with original chrome, and it's a beautiful bike. So that's actually hanging on the wall in my shop. So that's a keeper for sure. But most of the other ones I could probably let go of at some point. But lately I've been collecting Hutches like it's my full-time job. I don't know why, but I never owned one. I kind of always wanted one, but now I have several of them that just kind of popped up, and I keep grabbing them.
It's so funny because I didn't like them or didn't want them when we were growing up, and now that I see what you've done with them, particularly you did a Hutch, it's a pink one, and it just really caught my attention the other day, and I'm like, okay, like that's a pretty sweet looking bike. And I like the colors because the colors were so fun in the 80s also. They were just pushing the mark, and you know, they were just so unique, and they were just so loud. And then the accessories, like we talked about, you can make them as loud as you want and personalize them as you want. They could be yours, like the individual bike. Even though your friend may have had the same bike, you may have had it in a different color, or even if it was the same color, your attachments were so different. Although that was rare, I'm like, I don't think anyone around me ever had the same bike and me theirs. It just was one of those things where there was so much variety and everyone had so much taste that you just, they never looked the same.
That's right.
And, you know, and they were expensive. So when you bought something, we wanted to buy something that was true to you and unique to you, not what your friends had, I think, as well. A lot of mowing lawns to produce the money to buy those things. So even today, they cost a lot of money. That's what I like about them. One day I will have my own collection. I think I'll probably be in my 60s, 70s still riding them, honestly.
I love that.
Just because I'm just, you know, I'm pretty in pretty good health, so I figure that why not keep going if you can. And I still like doing tricks on them and stuff. I'm not as brave as I used to be, but I'm pretty brave. And, you know, that's just one of those things I think you just can't. Once you've done it, you just – it's like Tony Hawk. I watch him skateboard all the time. I'm like, dude, you just, like, broke all your bones and you're skateboarding again. You've got to be in, like, pushing, like, 60, 70 years old here on skateboard, but – not really, but I mean, just what he's doing still on the skateboard and the flips and everything is just incredible. So it does give me hope that we still have longevity, even like Tom Brady. We just have longevity if we take care of ourselves and do what we love, you know? So,
yeah. Tony Hawk is one of my major inspirations as an entrepreneur. And it's crazy you brought him up because to me, his branding is there's none other. You know, he is so good with his branding, and he created an empire with his name. You know, he started off riding, you know, different companies' brands like Palo Peralta, so on and so forth. But then he's Tony Hawk. Now it's everything is Tony Hawk. His skateboard decks, video games, even BMX bikes, believe it or not. And what I like about Tony Hawk is he's tried everything and realizes when something doesn't go quite right, learns from it, and adjusts. And he's done so well and become so successful with that mindset, not afraid to try something and realize when you make a mistake and don't keep pushing a mistake to try to make it work. You just bow out and move on and readjust, change direction and keep moving forward. And he's just so good at that. So he's always been one of my idols.
Yeah, mine too. And he also has a book. I actually have like in the 80s, maybe it's like 88, 89, I have a Power Parole to Tony Hawk skateboard, an ancient one that I customized, of course, to the way I wanted. You buy the board and then you buy the trucks and the wheels and, you know, customize it any way you want from there, obviously. But I still have it. It's still kind of crazy. It is in storage, but I still have that board. It's incredible. And I think about it all the time, but it is one of like Tony Hawk's original boards from Power Parole.
Wow.
So, still have that around and just built it and really I take care of my things. Obviously I rode it, so it has some wear and tear on it, but it is nice. But the other thing that I wanted to say is Tony Hawk is a great book. It's called The Unlikely CEO, And it's an incredible book about like exactly what it is. Here's a guy who's an unlikely character, no real formal training in business, but just turns himself into a brand, turns himself into a business, does more than just represent someone else. He rises to the top to represent himself in his own brand, in his business, that so many entrepreneurs nowadays try to be this personal brand of their business. But he did it. I mean, he was one of the first that I ever saw rose up in his sport and truly cemented his name across the sport.
That's right.
And what I would call action sports in general. You just know it, the video games, the contest, I think we have a lot of things that because of BMX or popularity and, you know, the popularity of skateboarding, you have some cool events around the world that exist today and people can make a living doing it where it was just like, oh, I'm a sponsored skateboarder, I'm a sponsored factory BMXer. Now it's like you can get real money to do it and, you know, real sponsorships and there's real courses, you know, depending how much it looks according to the 80s or not, there's still this growing sport around it, which I think are cool. And I think it's getting back to the more traditional sense also in a lot of ways.
Definitely.
So, Sean,
100%.
As we wrap up here, is there anything you want to share with the audience? Anything that when you're like getting on this podcast, so I want to talk about that. Is there anything that, you know, you'd want to share with anyone or the future kids who are getting into BMX potentially? Maybe it isn't just a trend. There'll be a whole new wave of youngsters that'll find it cool and fashionable, just like the rock and roll we grew up on is now, you know, all the kids love it, all that old hard rock. So maybe it's going to be something like that. So what would you share?
You know, I think in the respect to opening a business and creating a company and a brand, some of the advice I would give would be just be consistent and do it for yourself. You know, only do it if you really believe in it and it makes you happy. And then just distance yourself from the negative people and comments. Social media it can be a nasty place too. So when you see those things, just shrug it off. Don't respond. Don't even listen to that kind of noise and just pace yourself. You know, you can get burned out too. So you got to separate work and doing anything else, you know, you just got to have a balance there. And you're not going to be able to succeed in anything unless you have the support of those in your circle. So make sure that whatever you want to do, you can either do it 100% by yourself or you have a support unit with you that's willing to take that adventure head on just like you would, because I think that's huge in order to do that. And if you want to do what I'm doing in BMX, be humble about it. I mean, I've seen people out there that had like 400 followers, built 3 bikes and claim to be the best builder in the state they live in. That's not humble. You know, just go out there and do your best, build what you want. And you're going to listen to the people that are commenting and see, you know, if that's the direction that people like. And if you're not doing it for the people, then just do it for yourself. You know, who cares what they like if it makes you happy?
Yeah, I agree with that. And anyone who's listening in, you might hear background noise or music every once in a while as I was flipping through your Instagram, because like the video, the music, the choreography, you could maybe hear it a little bit in the background. I try to turn down the volume, but every once in a while, I just wanted to hear what song it was. And you can hear that as I'm doing the research, because there's like the pink bike. There's a lot of things. You did like a Crew Jones type bike, I think, at one point, maybe.
I did a Radical Rick bike recently.
Radical Rick.
Yep. Very excited about that bike. Big, big plans for that bike.
And one of them is go ahead.
That was a collaboration build that Haro and Damian Fulton, the artist of Radical Rick, reached out to me and asked me to build this bike. And the hopes are to have it in the BMX Hall of Fame when they induct Radical Rick into the Hall of Fame this October.
Whoa, so
that's a very special bike. Yeah, that's huge. If that goes down like that, to have one of my bike builds that I was trusted with by Haro and Damian Fulton in the Hall of Fame would be huge for me. I don't know where do you go from there, right? So what an amazing opportunity they gave me. So fingers crossed that goes through.
It's just such an incredible thing. And you're building all these Hutch bikes. I noticed you said that as we're flipping through here. There's just so much content on there. Anyone who loves BMX bikes, like you cannot, go wrong with following rad_BMX_builds, because like it's literally been in here for, gosh, it must be 8 years, 9 years. I don't even know. Yeah. Like when I moved to Colorado, sort of when I discovered it. And so that was like 2014, 2015. That all came to light. So I've been at least following you for that long, where I really was like, okay, I'm following this page, but maybe even earlier than that. But I just remember just like, I'm glad someone is doing this, because I always wondered what it would be like to rebuild those bikes or bring back this sport or bring back our childhood. 'Cause so many people do it through sneakers and toys and everything. That was like the 80s were like everything. The boom of everything happened in the 70s and 80s, I feel like. And like there's so much nostalgia there for kids and memories that we actually tie to physical things we owned. You know, it's just crazy. Yeah. And those physical things can literally bring us back to that time and space in our heads, and those memories and feelings, you know, emotions, for good, for good, bad, for whatever. But I mean, I think for most of us, it was good. There was a lot of escape that happened on a BMX bike.
Yep. I started the Instagram page August of 2015. So we're going on 8 years, and I've been doing the YouTube for about a year and a half. So I've been doing Instagram BMX stuff for quite a long time. Probably one of the older accounts on there. I'm no longer the biggest account. There's another guy, but he just does content. That's all he does. He doesn't sell or anything like that. It's just has a collection. He's got a real big account, but he leverages his TikTok audience to come over there. I've just been a grassroots Instagram guy this whole time, and now I'm trying to start at the bottom on YouTube. And I just do it for me and do it for fun. And if people like it, then they subscribe. I hope people listening go give me a subscribe or follow me on Instagram. That'd be great. If you like BMX bikes, it's not a bad place to start.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you will love what Sean is doing there. It's incredible. Will you tell us one more time, Sean, where they can find you? YouTube, Instagram, all of your spots.
Sure, absolutely. So radbmxbuilds.com is a website where you can buy merch. You can buy my bikes if they're for sale. And it will lead you to the social medias. I do have TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And the big account is the Instagram account at rad_BMX_builds. And then you can find me on YouTube at radbmxbuilds.
Damn, I love this episode. I'm going to have you back one of these days for a part two so we can talk more, maybe even about the movie Rad, if that's cool with you.
Be my pleasure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. I appreciate you guys. Obviously, we're new and we're getting this off the ground. It's an extension of the Justin the Food Entrepreneur show that I do, as well as the Centurion Leadership Italian show with Justin Bizzaro that I do. So I appreciate all the fans that have migrated over. Thank you for the downloads. We're starting to see more and more increased every day as we're releasing these episodes. We also have a plethora of entrepreneurs and people in different spaces. That's the goal here, is to see entrepreneurs in all the different parts of the world, all the different fields. I mostly used to concentrate on food, but as we did this, and I did the podcast, I had a lot of non-food entrepreneurs come to me wanting to be on the show. So we've sort of spun off another show for that space. And you'll see lots and lots of episodes. We drop 2 a week, one on Monday, one on Thursdays. As you guys start looking for those, that's where they'll be. So thank you again for everyone for listening in. I'm Justin Bizzaro. You can find me on Instagram at Justin Bizzaro, BIZZARO. And you can find us in these podcasts and any podcast that I'm in. Just search Justin Bizzaro and you'll find all 4 of my podcasts on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. And we're out.